Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. We volunteers at KABU are so thankful that the station is continuing to provide relevant information and wonderful music to help us maintain through this pandemic, and we're sure that you share our feelings. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, KABU has had to cancel our Spring Pledge Drive, but you can still help us through these difficult times. Please consider becoming a member of KABU or renewing your membership if you are already a member by going to kboo.fm and click on the donate button on the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. Since the COVID-19 pandemic struck, there have been important recent developments in the 15-year struggle to stop the Jordan Cove LNG export terminal and Pacific Connector gas pipeline. When we last talked about this issue, the state of Oregon had just denied two critical permits that are required for the project to proceed, and we are waiting for the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to make their decision on whether or not to approve the project. Once the pandemic became a global crisis, most people thought that FERC would put their decision on hold, while concerns about COVID-19 took center stage. But that did not happen. Today we talk with Ali Rosenbluth, Rogue Climate Campaigns Director, and Ashley Audicki, Rogue Climate Coos County Community Organizer, about how the tribes, impacted landowners, community members, and the state of Oregon are fighting back against FERC's conditional approval of Jordan Cove LNG in the midst of this global pandemic. Ali, welcome back to Locus Focus, and Ashley, welcome to the show.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks for having us on.
Hi, Barbara. It's nice to be here.
Good to have you both. And welcome. This is your first time, Ashley. Ali is actually an old hand here, but it's really good to have the Coos Bay input now. Well, let's just talk a little bit for a moment. So what is Rogue Climate?
Rogue Climate is a grassroots organization that is based in Southern Oregon, focused on bringing practical solutions to climate change. One of those things is stopping the Jordan Cove LNG export terminal, which would impact our communities greatly and become the largest source of climate pollution in Oregon if built. We also work on clean energy projects and energy efficiency projects and have a youth organizing program where we train the next generation of climate leaders.
And Ashley, how did you get involved in Rogue Climate? Because you live in Coos Bay, right?
Yes. And living in Coos County the last 5 years, got to see the way how Jordan Cove was making themselves seem like the good neighbor with their glossy mailers and everything, and just really could see how this project is not right for Coos County. And so got the opportunity to work with Rogue Climate and to help share how this project has no viable path forward in Coos County.
And just to add too, we have board members and a lot of volunteers in Klamath and Douglas County as well, and Josephine County also. Our two home bases are in Medford and in Coos Bay, but we are all throughout Southern Oregon working to stop Jordan Cove and build local jobs and renewable energy for our communities.
Well, there's a bunch of breaking news today, and so I first want the listeners to know that we're not really speaking on Monday, May 25th. This is actually Thursday, May 21st, which is when I record the show, and then we will air it on Monday. So we'll be speaking in the present tense of what, when you're listening to it, is at least 4 days ago. But tell me, what did you awake to this morning, Ali? What news?
Yeah, so this morning we had Jordan Cove on the agenda of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and they decided to deny the rehearing requests that the state of Oregon, the tribal governments, impacted landowners, and environmental groups sent in asking them to reconsider their approval of the Jordan Cove LNG project. This means that the next step is challenging FERC's approval of Jordan Cove LNG in the Court of Appeals.
Well, let's back up a little bit and talk a little bit about this FERC decision, because the last time that we talked, actually, FERC had just put off the decision. And it was back in February, and it was because the Coastal Management Act permit was not granted by the state of Oregon. So they needed more time to decide what to do. So let's just sort of catch the audience up on what's happened since mid-February with the ongoing twisted tale of Jordan Cove LNG.
Yeah, so a few months after FERC decided not to vote on Jordan Cove that day we talked in February, they since then approved the project with the conditions that the company gets their permits from the state of Oregon. So the company cannot start construction or any tree clearing before they have all of the necessary permits from the state of Oregon. However, with this FERC approval, they do allow this Canadian Fossil Fuel Corporation to seize private property through eminent domain. So even though there's a really big likelihood that this project will never be built, and landowners could see eminent domain at their doorsteps any day now.
It's very puzzling to me. So what does it mean if landowners' property is seized through eminent domain and this is never built? What happens to the property then? Who's going to own it in the long run?
The company will own that easement, and you know, they could sell it to another company if they're interested in doing that, or they could just hold on to it. So it's hard to know what their plans are. You know, we haven't heard any whisperings of that process starting yet. But actually, what was interesting is this weekend, Jordan Cove actually cleared out their offices in Coos Bay and Klamath Falls. So their offices have been closed in Southern Oregon and in Portland for a while now. But as we saw this weekend, those offices are now totally empty. Their ads are gone. Their desks are gone. Their like flat screen TVs with their ads that were showing nonstop are gone. And Ashley actually was just by the Coos Bay office a few days ago walking, and she noticed and sent me photos. So that was really interesting. I don't know if you have anything else to add on that, Ashley.
Well, just with the office closures, it's just during a time when our communities need support, shows you that Pembina is no longer pretending to be that Southern Oregon's good neighbor, and that, you know, they've been trying to convince us that Jordan Cove LNG would benefit anyone, but it's really to benefit fossil fuel executives in Canada.
Yeah, well, I saw the news actually just the other day when I was on the No LNG Export website, and it was a little bit of a surprise and then not a surprise at all, because the times that I've been by that office, the few times I've been in Coos Bay in the last year, I haven't seen anybody in there. So how active was that office even when it was supposedly open?
When it was supposedly open, there have been like a few employees there, but it really became active whenever there was a public comment opportunity at local meetings. So we really saw them showing up just at times when it looked good, but not really there for community when people have questions and, you know, just day-to-day matters, they're not really present.
Well, I guess listeners might not be totally aware that Jordan Cove has been putting up a front for a number of years about being this great neighbor and providing all these jobs. Just describe how they presented themselves to the community, in what forms they did that, and what you expect now that the office is closed.
One way, just how I became interested in Jordan Cove's involvement, was seeing them show up at, you know, large community events, just coming in as like a title sponsor, speaking at local Chamber of Commerce events, having a lot of like really neat little, not neat, but a lot of giveaway items that make Jordan Cove LNG look glossy, green, and good.
And they also had those famous, as Larry Mangan called them, the giant Hallmark cards that they would send. Why don't you describe what those are?
The company actually sent out these giant mailers every week for a month, two years ago, I think, that had these like really silly pictures on them that were like, this is what a pipeline looks like. And it was just a beautiful picture of a river, which is just so not true. We're like, where is the clear cut? Where is the horizontal directional drilling materials? You know, so that was actually something that was really interesting, because when people saw that, they could just like so clearly see the lies that this company was touting. And, you know, it made people even more passionate about stopping this project. So it really backfired for Jordan Cove. And, you know, even after 15 years of this fight, our communities have become more united than ever to stop this project, and will continue to grow and do so until Jordan Cove LNG is no longer on the table for Southern Oregon.
Well, I'm still a little bit more curious about this office closure. I'm wondering, is this an indication that they really are going to put a lot less money into promoting the project? Because I already cut their funding, I forget how much last year, but they cut it significantly. And they stopped sending out those glossy mailers sometime last year.
Well, what I think it shows, you know, is that Their strategy isn't to try to convince Southern Oregonians or the state of Oregon that they are going to comply with the safeguards that protect our community. Their strategy now is going to the federal government to ask for opportunities to get around the state process, because they know they're never going to convince us and they're never going to be able to prove to the state that this project is a good idea.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this permit, this conditional permit that FERC has granted them. What's it conditional on?
The FERC permit is conditioned on the company receiving all of the necessary permits to build this project. So that includes the Clean Water Act, which has a state authorization in it, the Coastal Zone Management Act permit, which the state of Oregon has already denied, along with the Clean Water Act permit, the Clean Air Act, and so on. So there are a lot of permits that the company has either been denied through the state of Oregon or doesn't have applications in for. That means that they can't move forward this project until they do.
Even though they have this conditional permit, basically Pembina can't move forward until they get these state permits. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. And so what the company is trying to do is get the federal government to give them an out from the state process. So we've seen the company file a petition to FERC to ask them to waive the state's Clean Water Act denial. But if they do that, our coalition will be ready to challenge that in court. And the state of Oregon and Governor Kate Brown have already made it very clear that they are going to be defending those decisions as well. So even if the federal government tries to overrule or waive permits the state of Oregon has denied, it in the end won't be up to them. It'll be up to our court systems to decide. And we feel confident that the laws say that the state has the authority to stop this project and to protect our clean water, our climate, our lands, and that those denials will hold.
One of the things that was surprising to a lot of people was that it wasn't just the opponents of Jordan Cove who filed a rehearing request with FERC, but also Pembina itself did. And what was the basis for their request to have a rehearing?
Yeah, so FERC put in a lot of conditions around the approval for Jordan Cove, like we said before, specifically around them having to get all of their permits. And of course, Pembina wants to be able to build this project, and they know that the state of Oregon has made it very clear that it's not going to happen through their process. So in their rehearing request, you know, there's a lot of questions around clarification about what FERC means, but they specifically ask for some language to be changed around the Coastal Zone Management Act authorization. So again, they're just trying to get out of having to meet the standards that our state has to keep our community safe.
Now, in the email that I got this morning from Power Past Frack Gas about the denial of the rehearing request, it said that all the requests were denied. Does that include Pembina's request as well as the opponent's requests?
Yeah, that's our understanding. We will have more information on that on Friday. FERC makes their decisions, and then they don't send out the actual, documentation on the docket until the next morning. So we're still kind of in a holding pattern to see if, you know, they denied all rehearings or if they, you know, gave Jordan Cove some leeway. And we won't know that until Friday. So yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah, so actually, by the time the show airs on Monday, the 25th, we should actually know. So why don't you let me know, and I will include this either in an addendum for the audio tomorrow, or I will put it on the website so people can know what's the latest. And we want you to know that you're listening to Locust Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, Coast Community Radio in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Allie Rosenbluth and Ashley Odicki, who are both with Rogue Climate in Southern Oregon, about how the tribe's impacted landowners, community members, and the state of Oregon are fighting back against FERC's conditional approval of Jordan Cove LNG in the midst of this global pandemic. I want to go back to that really kind of scary week in mid-March when the country country was shutting down, and Oregon had already shut down, and the news came that FERC had approved this permit. And actually, I've talked to a couple people. One is a board member from Rural Climate, who I just happened to have on my show the day after the FERC decision. So we got a little bit of an immediate response, but I just wanted to talk a little bit more about what it feels like to be in the midst of a global pandemic and to be having this pipeline and LNG export battle that's been going on for now pushing 16 years, to have a decision made via Zoom meeting, that's because the FERC commissioners didn't even meet in person, at a time when you all can't get out and even meet with each other.
Yeah, it was a really clear example of how FERC puts the fossil fuel industry above communities at all times, right? So it was a real shock for a lot of folks, especially for people who own property on the pipeline route, who now could face eminent domain, even though they can't leave their homes because of COVID-19. And so right now we're actually asking folks to call their congresspeople and ask them to tell FERC to stop approving and moving forward fracked gas projects during the ongoing public health crisis. So there's no reason why we should be authorizing new projects when communities don't have the opportunity to speak out and to advocate for their health and safety.
Well, back over the past year, while I was recording interviews with all of you for my documentary, Holding the Thin Green Line, and there was a lot of calling out to the state and to Kate Brown in particular and to the state agencies to do something. And interestingly, in the last few months, it seems like there's been a lot of listening. And I was just thinking about the slideshow that I put together for this that we're going to be showing in a couple of weeks over Zoom, and some of the images that Rogue Climate and other groups put together thanking all of our elected officials. And I'm having them run through my mind right now as we're talking. So let's talk a little bit about the change in the political leadership and the change in tone that we've been coming from state officials as well as our federal representatives.
Ashley, do you want to take that one?
Yeah. Well, after years of pressure, Governor Kate Brown has pledged to defend Oregon's authority on Jordan Cove LNG. And we're really looking forward to seeing this in action. And also recently, Senator Ron Wyden and Representative Peter DeFazio have taken positions to oppose Jordan Cove LNG, joining Senator Jeff Merkley. So it's great that our leadership is leaning, in Oregon is leaning towards opposing the project.
And I even understand, I think that Obe Lumenauer has come out against it. It's a little bit harder to read him, but I read between the lines and the many emails I get from him that he's basically opposing all frack gas projects now. Do you know anything about that?
I haven't seen Representative Blumenhauer say anything particularly about Jordan Cove, but I would love to hear about his constituents in Portland putting pressure on him to say specifically that he thinks Jordan Cove LNG is a bad idea for Oregon.
Well, actually, I was just looking at the election results from the primary on Tuesday, and he got about 80% of the vote, which was the least of any of the other incumbents that were running from the Democrats. Peter DeFazio really basically did quite well against his opponent, who was running in opposition of Jordan Cove, and I think actually was one of the reasons why Peter DeFazio came out so strongly against Jordan Cove. But with Blumenauer, I just wonder if maybe that 5% difference in approval came from the fact that he hasn't been as outspoken as some of his fellow Democrats. Also, has Suzanne Bonamici said anything about Jordan Cove yet?
No, she has not. But that's a thing that people can do when they're listening to this radio interview right now or after they're finished listening is call her up if she's your congressperson and ask her to oppose Jordan Cove. Ask her also to tell FERC that they should not be moving forward new LNG projects during this global health crisis.
Let's talk a little bit about what Ron Wyden has set forth, because he's actually become very strong about opposing frack gas projects. And one of the first statements that I saw him put out, which was at least maybe 6 weeks ago, was basically calling on FERC to put a hold on any decisions while the pandemic was going on. What do you know about that?
Yeah, Senator Ron Wyden has been really watching the FERC process for many years now. And even before he opposed Jordan Cove LNG, he was really commenting very frequently on what FERC was doing and how the FERC process has just been so unfair for so many community members. But we know that Jordan Cove is failing, and Senator Ron Wyden is opposing this project because the people of Oregon have clearly said no to this project over and over again because it would trample the rights of tribal nations. It would, you know, impact private property rights, damage our clean water, our fisheries, and our climate. So we're really excited that Senator Ron Wyden is joining us in opposing this project, and are looking forward to seeing how he can make an impact to ensure our communities are protected from this project ever starting.
I want to talk a bit more about the kind of community involvement that's been engaged in this struggle and how intense it's gotten. And I sort of wanted to do this as kind of like a tale of two counties. And so we have two counties represented. Allie is from Jackson County. Ashley is from Coos County. And I want, first, Ashley, I want you to describe your county's response to Jordan Cove and its evolution. And then after that, Ashley, you can talk about what's been going on in Coos County over the while.
Well, it's been really exciting to see the opposition to Jordan Cove LNG in Coos County grow, especially in the last year. We've been out in the community as well as having amazing rallies, getting people engaged, rallies before COVID. And this past January, the city of Coos Bay tied in a vote to dredge in a protected part of the bay. And unfortunately, that tie was broken in favor of Jordan Cove LNG by Mayor Joe Bonetti. And it was a really historic moment because throughout that process, hundreds of people showed up. We filled City Hall. We actually filled it to the point that we had to have outdoors viewing parties for the meeting. And people just really showed up more and to oppose the project and Coos County.
Well, actually, by sheer coincidence, I happened to go to two of those meetings, and I went to one a little over a year ago. It was back in March of 2019, and it was kind of a last-minute call, and there were probably about 20 people that were opposing the dredging and about three who were in support of it, but it wasn't packed. And then I went to another meeting back in October where it was basically just a decision. The city council was being pushed to accelerate their decision on the dredging instead of giving it the thoughtful time they wanted. And that was amazing. I mean, the room was bursting at the seams. Maybe it wasn't as big, I think, as the last couple meetings that happened after that. But it was really interesting to see just how much support had grown for opposing Jordan Cove just in that 6 months.
Yes. And since I've been able to join the Rogue Climate team, some of the work that we've been doing in Coos County is bringing in together all the different groups who have been working to oppose the project. So the Coos Bay Surfrider chapter has been a huge support, Citizens for Renewables. And we even work with marine biologists, people that know this estuary better than anyone. And really advocating to the community that this is an opportunity for them, for their voice to be heard too. And I think just being able to go out to community and let people know that they do have that opportunity to get involved. And that's been really exciting to see the engagement grow in this community.
Well, politically, it seems that for a long time, the city council and the county commission, well, I guess both North Bend City Council, Coos Bay City Council, and then the Coos County Commission were all pretty much being bankrolled by Jordan Cove, by Pembina and its preceding owners. And things definitely have changed. I wanted to talk a bit about how much that has changed. I know that Sam Schwartz, who was the chair of a president of Surfrider, who stepped down to run for county commission, I wonder how well he did in the election.
It was a primary race, and the top two winners were incumbent Bob Main and Katie Iman.
So in November, there's a possibility that an opponent to Jordan Cove might actually get on this county commission. Is the county commission totally in support of Jordan Cove, or are there any dissenting voices on it as it stands right now?
At community hearings, we just have seen that Jordan Cove it gets approved at meetings, so we haven't seen dissent there.
We also know that there's a county commissioner who's gotten lots and lots of money, I think at least $50,000 or more, maybe $100,000 from Jordan Cove for his reelection campaign.
And I do want to note that these decisions that have been made by Coos County commissioners on local land use permits are that have been approved are currently being challenged at the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. So it does not mean that those decisions were final.
And I guess one other question, we get to these appeals. There was a big concern when I was in Coos County in last October that North Bend was going to be charging citizens a huge amount of money to file appeals. Was that ever resolved?
They were able to make a deal between the city and the attorneys representing those community members. They still had to pay, but not as much as the city originally proposed, which was tens of thousands of dollars, and really clearly just a way for the city of North Bend to signal to people that pushing back against this project isn't something that they want to see happen. But yeah, Ashley is exactly right. The local land use permits in Coos County that have been approved are all going to be heard by the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals, and so we will be able to see the results on that fairly soon as well.
Just a tip of the hat to Jody McCaffrey, who has been filing these appeals for years and years and years. Is she out there fighting still?
The last time I spoke with Jody, she is busy working away on whatever comments that she can write for the FERC docket and to make sure that, you know, especially points about safety are expressed throughout this process. So Jody McCaffrey, she's been a true advocate for the issues on why we oppose this project.
Ali, I wanted to talk now about the political climate in Jackson County, because it seems to me from just talking to you over the last couple years that it's quite different, that Jackson County has taken some different positions than some of the other counties, particularly Douglas County and Coos County.
Yeah, so because of organizing in Jackson County and, you know, really making sure that we are uplifting the voices of the people who are most impacted by this project, the Jackson County commissioners actually opposed Jordan Cove LNG outright, which is really exciting and really helpful that they have been another voice in advocating against the project. Yeah, we're, you know, continuing to organize in Jackson County. And, you know, there's specifically a lot of interest, you know, in Shady Cove. The city of Shady Cove has passed multiple resolutions opposing the project because the pipeline would cross the Rogue River, right upriver of the town. And all across the county and in Josephine County as well, there's huge opposition to this. You know, our communities are really dependent on the Rogue River for our tourism industry, for fishing, and because it's like really important to our identity in Southern Oregon. And so, you know, no matter what your political beliefs are in Jackson County and throughout most of Southern Oregon, our rivers are really important to us. And the idea that this project would pose such a huge risk to the Rogue River and hundreds of rivers throughout Southern Oregon has been something that's been really unifying and that we've been able to continue to uplift and protect through public engagement.
I mean, I find it fascinating, particularly Josephine County, but also Jackson County, which I used to consider two of the most really conservative, if not outright reactionary counties in Oregon. And back in the early 90s, were the home of a lot of far-right religious fundamentalist groups fighting all kinds of things, whether it was protecting the spotted owl or making homosexuality illegal. They kind of ran the gamut. But it seems that a lot has changed in Jackson County in particular, and I understand in Josephine County too. I mean, I don't think you would have ever thought of having in what we would consider an environmental demonstration in Josephine County 30 years ago. So how do you attribute this kind of change in climate? Is it, I'm curious how much of it is that different people are living there now, that there's more of an influx of other people, or if it's just this issue is just hits right at the core of what people really care about.
Yeah, well, I think one thing that's really interesting about this campaign to stop Jordan Cove is that there are so many reasons why people oppose this project. Whether you are concerned about private property rights, indigenous sovereignty, our clean water, our fishing grounds, the climate, there's reasons to oppose Jordan Cove. And so, you know, making sure that we are you know, widening our circle and bringing people in is really critical for this campaign and has been, you know, how we've had, you know, thousands of people show up to hearings at the Jackson County Fairgrounds and other places across Southern Oregon. And it's bridging those gaps, and it's knowing that, you know, we might not agree on everything, but we do want to stop this project, and we will work together to do that. And there's a lot of really incredible organizing that's happening in Jackson and Josephine County beyond the pipeline campaign as well. So the Rogue Action Center has been doing a lot of really great work around housing justice and racial justice, and Southern Oregon Rising Tide, of course, is a huge leader in stopping Jordan Cove, but also have been a voice for responding to mutual aid in this COVID-19 crisis. So, there's a lot of interesting things that are happening in our communities, and you know, I feel really lucky to get to be a part of it.
You are listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, Coast Community Radio in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Ali Rosenbluth and Ashley Odicki, who are both with Rogue Climate in Southern Oregon, about how the tribes impacted landowners, community members, and the state of Oregon of fighting back against FERC's conditional approval of Jordan Cove LNG in the midst of this global pandemic. Well, also, there's like a really strong tribal presence in the fight against Jordan Cove and the Pacific Connector Gas Pipeline. And actually, you said to me last summer when I was interviewing you, talking about the very violent history of Southern Oregon that you've learned to appreciate from getting to work with the tribes. And they shared that with me a lot when I was talking to them, too. But let's talk about the connection between the tribes, who are the biggest tribe that we know of in Oregon that's like really fighting this in the forefront, is the Klamath tribes. But other tribes as well, including tribes along the coast, have also been involved in the fight. What kinds of coalitions have been built between the tribes and the landowners and activists like yourself?
Yeah, so a good example of that is the rehearing request that we sent to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission a month ago. That was just denied today. That was a joint rehearing request that was sent by the Klamath tribes, the Niskanen Center, which is the attorneys that are representing impacted landowners, and a long list of environmental conservation groups. So, you know, that's just an example of our communities coming together despite differences to stop this project. And there were other tribes that sent in rehearing requests as well. And of course, the state of Oregon also did as well.
Well, I've talked to a few landowners who have mentioned how the threat that they feel to their land from the pipeline possibly crossing it and being forced through eminent domain to give an easement for the pipeline makes them really appreciate the battle that the tribes are fighting alongside with them, because they recognize how the tribes have had their land taken from them historically for a very long time. And so in a way makes them empathize a lot more with what the tribe struggles have been for 150 years. I wonder if you come in contact with that thinking and what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's, you know, really important for everyone in Oregon to understand the history of colonization here in this state. I it's really interesting getting to facilitate conversations between folks from all different perspectives. And, you know, I don't want to speak on behalf of anyone, you know, I think that there's a lot of important, like, community building that happens through that. And this is an issue that brings together people of so many diverse backgrounds, that it's an opportunity for us to, like, sit down and see, like, you know, what we do have in common and what we can learn from each other. So, I think that everyone's really grateful for the people that they've met and that they've become friends with through this process.
Well, I was thinking about how you mentioned last summer that one of the goals of Rogue Climate was to really help the people, the impacted pipeline landowners in particular, the importance of cross-county organizing. So what does that mean, and how have you achieved that? Because these people live pretty far away from each other. And interestingly, I've learned since the pandemic that they're far more familiar with Zoom than I am, because that's how you all have been meeting for probably several years now.
Yeah, we have a coalition of community members who are organizing together. We meet on Zoom every other week. We, you know, work on communications together, strategy together. We do we used to do annual retreats where we'd all get together in person, but that actually had to be canceled because of the coronavirus crisis. But yeah, we're always in communication. And, you know, before COVID started, like, part of my work was, working with community groups in all four counties. So making sure that, I was there to support folks in person, when it was needed, and making sure that there was, support for people who were ready to, get up and organize and, speak out against this project. And that's just been so critical for people to have that support, because it can be scary to try to do this on your own. And nobody has to do this on their own. You know, there are people who have been doing this for over a decade. We're here to support each other. And the more people who are part of this, the stronger we are.
Well, how is the COVID pandemic affecting you both? How is it affecting you in terms of your own work, and then in trying to stay in community with all these people when you can't get together physically anymore? How are you maintaining?
Yeah, it's a lot of Zoom meetings and a lot of phone calls.
I just wanted to add it about the Zooms and webinars, and like also talking about county crossover. Like we did like a last week, there was like a teach-in by somebody in Coos County teaching about like the Kentuck inlet mitigation plan. So then people throughout the state within our coalition could learn more about those details. So I think there's even next week an Indigenous webinar coming up that I know Allie can speak more about. And there's just like really great sharing opportunities, so that even though we can't really gather in person, but using these online platforms for like education opportunities, I think that's been the most exciting part. And I'm also working on one with members from Coos County to talk about like the coastal impacts that this project would have.
Well, let's talk about the water protectors and landowners webinar that you're going to be having at the end of next week.
Yeah, so it's a land and water protectors webinar that is being planned by Native folks who have been fighting these projects for years. So it's connecting the Indigenous-led resistance of Jordan Cove, Tacoma LNG, resistance against the Trans Mountain Pipeline, and resistance against the Coastal GasLink Pipeline that's on unceded Wet'suwet'en territory. So it's going to be really interesting, and it's going to like weave together the impacts and the fights that, you know, have been held for so long by those communities, and will, you know, be an opportunity for people to learn how they can act in solidarity with all of these fights in the Pacific Northwest. So it is on Thursday, March 28th.
May 28th,
yeah. From 2 p.m. to 3:30. And if you're interested in getting the Zoom link for that webinar, you can find it on the Rogue Climate page, on the No LNG Exports Facebook page, the Signal Fire Facebook page. It should all be up there to register.
And actually, I'll put that on the Locus Focus webpage as well. Who's going to be speaking, and what kind of format is this webinar going to take?
There are a whole lineup of speakers. Kaila Farrell-Smith, who's a Klamath Modoc artist, is going to be facilitating the conversation. Thomas Joseph, who is a Hoopa tribal member, is going to be leading the land acknowledgement. Dakota Case will be speaking about the Tacoma LNG project, who's a Puyallup water warrior. Brooke Thompson, who is a Yurok and Karuk tribal member, is going to be talking specifically about Jordan Cove. Conahus Manuel, who has really been leading the work of the Tiny House Warriors blocking the Trans Mountain Pipeline, is going to be speaking about resistance there. And then there will be a representative from the struggle up north on Wet'suwet'en territory speaking about their fight against the Coastal GasLink pipeline as well.
One of the advantages, one of the few advantages that I see of this is like, this is the kind of gathering you wouldn't be able to have in person because you'd have to have them in all these different places. And so that's the small saving grace that I see about getting together by Zoom. But I wonder if you're seeing other great potential for Zoom to actually transcend the kind of organizing boundaries that you used to when we depended so much on being in person with each other.
I think we just have to get creative in this moment, right? And whether that's using Zoom or other technologies, you know, we're going to figure it out. Like just this week, Energize South Coast, which is a program that Rogue Climate is moving forward in Coos Bay to help folks get discounted energy efficiency appliances, had over 45 people on a Zoom call workshop to be a part of this program. So, you know, we're getting creative and we're making things work, but we are, you know, the top priority is keeping our communities safe and healthy. And right now that means social distancing.
Just to mention another Zoom event that's coming up that Rogue Climate is co-sponsoring, and Power Pack Sprout Gas, Oregon Fish and Social Responsibility, and KABU. And it's a slideshow that I put together to go with the second hour of Holding the Thin Green Line, and it's about Jordan Cove. And it's been updated to reflect all the changes that happened since last November, which is when the show originally ended in the governor's office. So that'll be on June 5th from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. And again, I'll put information about how you can get onto that Zoom meeting. It's kind of interesting, actually. I found, as I started announcing this slideshow presentation a couple days ago, and getting responses a lot faster than you usually do. And my partner was saying, that's because nobody has anything to do, or everybody's at home. You're going to get a really good response. But I'm wondering, are you getting more response, do you think, to these kind of Zoom meetings because so many people are at home?
I think that there's a, like, new norm that these kinds of gatherings are going to have to happen over Zoom, and people are becoming more comfortable with the technology. And I think that that's been, again, another positive thing that's come out of this terrible crisis. But yeah, I think, you know, people are excited to find ways to continue to be engaged, right? Like we've seen, you know, after 15 years of the fight against Jordan Cove, that when people show up and speak out against these projects, we really can win. And I know that people want to continue doing that. We want to continue winning and stopping these terrible fossil fuel projects. And right now, one of the ways to do that is by joining these kinds of meetings that are on Zoom and learning more about these issues that you care about. And I just want to plug Barbara's podcast, Holding the Thin Green Line and the Long and Twisted Tale of Jordan Cove. You know, I talk to people who have been involved in this fight for many, many years, and hearing their response to that podcast and how much it means to them and how much they love it, and that, you know, so many folks are moved to tears when they hear it, myself included, that I just, yeah, really want to, say if you can make it to that screening, definitely do it. And if not, you should definitely listen to the podcast when you have the chance, because it's really beautiful.
Well, thank you very much, Allie. Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KABU Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KPFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, Coast Community Radio in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Allie Rosenbluth and Ashley Odicki, who are both with Rogue Climate in Southern Oregon. We're talking about what's happening with Jordan Cove LNG, organizing to stop it, and just kind of in the last few moments, just kind of some of the other issues that are at play right now as we are all facing together this COVID pandemic that is keeping us at home. Since we're talking, I just want to do a little bit behind the scenes for the audio listeners, because this is a radio show and you don't usually see us. But because of Zoom, I get to look at Ashley, and I get to look at Allie. So I just want to describe how we're doing this, because you might wonder why the audio is so good for Ashley and Allie. It doesn't sound like the usual phone lines we had at Cable. That's because they're recording into their phones, and then they send me the audio, and then I edit it in Pro Tools on my computer. And so it's really pretty good. But what I really love about the image I'm getting is that Allie has her phone on a Kleenex box, Ashley has hers on a Clorox box, and this is the Allie, let me know that below the Kleenex box is definitely some disinfectant. So this is a real social distanced interview from the distance of, and we are in three different locations in Oregon, and so I feel like we are really transcending the limits that were sort of imposed upon us by stay-at-home order. And I've been spending a lot of time reading about the flu pandemic in 1918-1919 and looking at these images. Some of them are very familiar, everybody wearing masks, and some of it doesn't look that different from now. But the big difference is the technology. And also, we're not coming out of World War I. We're just having millions of wars around the world right now. But I just wonder how you see this technology as really enabling us to maybe move ahead in even more creative ways to make more, form more coalitions and work together even more strongly.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of opportunity in that. And I know that there are digital organizers who've been part of the climate movement for years, who've like really focused in on what are the best ways to use technology to get people to take action. And right now, feeling very grateful for all of the work that they have done in, you know, making things as seamless as possible already. But, you know, our communities are really creative, and like we know how to meet each other's needs, and we are using technology to do that sometimes. And it's exciting to see, and exciting to see what new tools we will have when we come out of this crisis.
Well, I want to get back now to the original subject of this show, which was fighting Jordan Cove LNG. And I want to go back to talking about Pembina's strategy to beat Oregon, basically. And so what are some of the expectations, or what are some of the options that they're looking into to be able to bypass Oregon state law and regulatory procedures so that they can go ahead and build this thing that very few people want?
There are two main things that they are working on right now. One is to get the U.S. Secretary of Commerce to override the coastal zone permit that the state of Oregon denied just the evening before FERC was supposed to make its original decision a few months ago. And, you know, what's clear is that the U.S. Secretary of Commerce can only do this if they find that Jordan Cove complies with the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Plan, or if it's in the interest of national security, which clearly Jordan Cove is not. But if the federal government tries to do this, we do expect the state of Oregon, tribal governments, impacted landowners, and environmental and climate organizations to be ready to defend our state's denial in court.
So one of the concerns, though, is how far up in the court system it goes and what happens if it makes it to the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court.
We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, this project is so flawed. There are so many hooks for us to stop this project that, you know, it's not just that they win one, it's that they win every single one. And, you know, even FERC said it this morning, this company cannot move forward this project without getting all of the permits that it needs. And right now, there is no viable path forward for the Jordan Cove LNG project. And we are going to do everything that we can. You know, communities across the state are going to do everything that we can to ensure that construction never starts for Jordan Cove LNG.
Well, I want to go back to the other concern that's really big, which is eminent domain. What plans do landowners have right now to fight that?
I don't want to speak on behalf of landowners. I'm sure they'd be happy to join your show to talk about that themselves. But we did file a joint rehearing request with the Niskanen Center, which is a think tank based in D.C. that is representing landowners on pipeline routes all across the nation who are facing unjust eminent domain procedures like this.
I'm thinking about some of the early interviews that I heard on KABU with Jody McCaffrey back, was probably more than 10 years ago, but a long time ago, when I first started learning about Jordan Cove LNG. And she sounded really alone back in those days. And I remember at the time when there was a struggle going on in Coos Bay and also in Astoria with LNG export terminals, well, they were supposed to be import to begin with, and they became export. And there's a lot of focus up here in Northern Oregon about Astoria and a huge fight, and they transformed their community, and they got rid of their county commissioners, and they defeated, I don't know, 5 million proposed LNG. That's an exaggeration, but they a whole bunch. It was almost maybe 10 at different times that popped up. And by April, I think it was April 15th, 2016, they defeated the last one, and Astoria, Oregon is now LNG free. Meanwhile, Jordan Cove still seemed to be chugging along, and a lot of people expected Jordan Cove to be built. And it seems like just in the last 4 years, things have really changed. And so I'm hoping that Jody doesn't feel quite as alone as she did back in 2010. So what do you see coming up in the near future about this coalition that's been pulled together and where it's going to go now?
On next steps for fighting the Jordan Cove LNG project, right, we are going to unite the communities that are impacted by this project and challenging the federal government's approval of this project, and also defending the state of Oregon's authority to deny this project. And, you know, we want to stop Jordan Cove LNG for good so that our communities can focus on creating local jobs and renewable energy and energy efficiency instead. So we're going to continue to organize. We're going to, you know, fight these legal challenges. And right now, if people want to take action after this podcast or interview is over, they can call their congressperson and ask them to tell FERC to stop moving forward projects like Jordan Cove LNG during the COVID-19 crisis. And if your congressperson doesn't oppose Jordan Cove, it's always good to tell them that you think they should and tell them why as well. You can also follow Rogue Climate at rogueclimate.org or on Facebook. We have Instagram and Twitter. And then our coalition, the No LNG Exports Coalition, has Facebook, Twitter, Instagram as well. And then, of course, Power Pass Frack Gas, which is on Facebook and Instagram, or not on Instagram, and Twitter as well. So you can follow this campaign at those sites. And there's more than that, too. There's hundreds of organizations that are a part of this. But it's a good way to get information and stay in the loop about how you can take action.
Well, somewhere in the unknown future when we can all come together again, what are your wishes? What kind of fantasies you have about getting together with fellow community members again, and what would you do when you can do that?
Well, my last year with organizing with these great community members, there's just so much excitement and energy because we're all passionate about stopping Jordan Cove LNG. So I know for myself personally, I just miss having that excitement of when everybody's gathered together, especially like if people ever take a look at our pictures online from our rallies, like there's just so much joy in people's faces that we I definitely miss seeing the people that we get to work with.
Yeah, same. I like, you know, way more than like the huge rallies and events, I really miss the like one-on-one connections that I get to have with different people who are impacted by this project, hanging out with them in their kitchens and getting to know more about them and what, you know, drives them to fight this project for 15 years. So I can't wait for the day where I get to hang out with the people who have become family because of this fight, and see their dogs and see how their gardens are doing and just check in and, you know, just really hoping that everyone stays safe and healthy throughout this pandemic.
And I can't wait till I can come down to Southern Oregon and see all you guys again, too. So we can all look forward to that and sort of have that as our beacon for where we're going. But in the meantime, I just want to appreciate all the great work that you guys are doing online. And anything else that we need to know about upcoming events that you might want to talk about?
I think we talked about the webinars that are happening that have been planned, and Ashley mentioned that there's a webinar that's in the works that's going to be feature coastal community members to talk about the coastal impacts of Jordan Cove, which again is like an exciting thing that we get to do because we're all on the internet now, and you know, really be able to teach folks who, you know, live on the pipeline route and don't necessarily think about the impacts to the bay, like how big of an impact and how much this would really change the Coos Bay area if the project went through.
Well, Allie and Ashley, it's really great to have you both on. It's nice to be able to see you for a brief moment here, too. And we'll just stay in touch and we'll talk again in a few months about the latest developments. And if anything happens in the, you know, that we should know of in the near future, let me know and we'll just put you on. So thanks a whole lot again for being on Locus Focus.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you.
Today we've been talking with Ali Rosenbluth and Ashley Odicki, both with Rogue Climate in Southern Oregon. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, Coast Community Radio in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff, who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KBOO on the air, but helping all of us volunteers make the best radio possible from home during this pandemic. Because the COVID-19 pandemic has forced us to cancel our spring pledge drive, which will be going on right now, we are asking you, our listeners, to help us if you can by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership. We understand that these times are hard for all of us, and that many of you are in no position to give away any money, but if you can, we really appreciate it. You can donate on our website, kboo.fm, by clicking on the donate button in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. Next week, we'll talk with Richard Heinberg about how the coronavirus pandemic reminds us that we are vulnerable biological organisms in Earth's web of life. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We'll go out with Everybody Must Stay Home by The Connor Party. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and wash your hands.